Welcome to the Should A Bit More podcast presented by Goal Boys. Coming up on the show today, Todd Wishnev, professional sports bettor, will join us. We'll talk some college basketball, some baseball. We'll get into these final four matchups, sides, totals, live betting, baseball, his takeaways so far. So we'll do a little bit of a deep dive with Todd, who's very good at this stuff, very successful at betting, looks for the small edges in terms of the pace, in terms of betting the side, the total, how the fouls are being called. So excited to dive in with Todd. But before we get to that, we'll start with some baseball just because last time we talked was Monday. Yankees and Pirates were playing well. Yankees and Pirates still playing well. Pirates 5-0 headed into their off day on Wednesday, and they are plus 950 to win the division. I think that's an interesting bet. I think that's a fun bet. Again, it's 1 week. They started off hot last year, and maybe by June you're sitting up and you're like, why the hell would I bet this? But I kind of think this is a good bet at 10-1. That division's not very good with the Brewers and the Reds and the Cubs. I mean, those teams, you know, that those teams are just not dominant. Though you don't have to deal with the Dodgers or the Braves or the Phillies or even Arizona, who's improved. It's just, it's a very mediocre division. And I don't know, could you steal it with 84, 85, 86 wins? 84 would probably be light, but you know, you get the idea. Could you win 86 games and win the division? I don't see why not. And could they get to 86? They have a lot of young talent. They've picked high in the draft for a lot of these years. You got Skeens in the minors. Cruz is a tremendous player. And I get some other younger pitchers. I guess Priester's a guy that was a first rounder that people like. You got some first rounder. Jones is a good prospect that actually made the team. So look, they're 5-0 all on the road. I know it's the Marlins and the Nationals, but still you bank those wins and you still have all your home games. Those are good wins for the Pirates. So plus 950 at FanDuel to win the division is a bet I do like, is a bet I made. So that's one baseball takeaway. Again, it's just nice to have it back. Nice to have it every day. Yankees, like we talked about on Monday, much improved. Good lineup, deep lineup, balance. So still questions about the pitching, starting pitching, Holmes at the back end. But a very good lineup, a fun team to watch too. This team's been very, I think stale is probably the best word. They've been stale for a few years. They're just so slow, so right-handed, a lot of strikeouts, a lot of double plays. If Judge doesn't do anything, nobody does anything. Now it's a different team. They're fun, they're balanced, they're left-handed. So Yankees and Pirates, two of the big takeaways from the first week or so in the season. I don't see anything awards-wise yet that I really want to jump in on, but long season, we'll have plenty of time to get all that stuff. We'll have Jason Weingarten on, I think, maybe next week, and we'll start to dive in some of the awards. Keep an eye on that going forward. Quickly on the Final Four, I'll make my official picks here on these games with the spreads on Friday. I'm leaning towards taking the points with Bama and laying it with Purdue. I just worry with NC State and Purdue. NC State, the big guy Burns getting in trouble with fouls, not being able to get his shot off on the other end. If you put him in a situation where he's got 2-3 fouls early, then he has to be careful on defense and play less aggressive, or you just have to bench him. And again, at the other end, can he get his shot off against Edie, who's a much taller player? That I don't know. And you know, when you have to double Edie, that leaves the three-point shooters to be wide open, and Purdue can knock them down. So I think Cinderella, the story might end here for NC State. UConn laying the 12, I know the fallacy of, hey, they're due, this is due, that's due. That doesn't always work like that. And if you were thinking that along the way with UConn, you're still waiting for that to come true, because they've just buried teams now, going back to last year for 10 straight games. I do think Bama, if they can hit enough threes, it's just 12 looks like a lot of points. It's a Final Four game. You're getting 12 in a Final Four game. I just think that's a couple points too many. I just think they're daring you to bet against UConn, which makes sense. UConn wins every game. They cover every game. So I can understand you. I can understand them daring you to bet the other side. So I would lean towards Bama plus the 12 and Purdue laying the 9.5. Hypothetical lines. These are the games. This is what the title games would be. And these are already up at some of the books. Purdue would be laying 5.5 to Bama. Bama would be laying 4.5 if they're playing NC State. So if it's Bama, NC State, Bama minus 4.5. If it's Bama, Purdue laying 5.5. Then if UConn's involved, UConn would be laying either 5 to Purdue or 15.5 to NC State. Oh boy. Can you imagine laying 15.5 in a title game? It depends what happens. If UConn beats Bama again by 20, I guess you're just going to have to make it 15.5. But at some point, like if NC State gets this game, eventually they're going to earn some respect. So I actually don't think it'll be 15.5. I think if they have a good showing, and obviously if they win, they did have a good showing. If they beat Purdue, I don't think that'll be 15.5, but that'll be fun to keep an eye on, see how accurate these hypothetical lines are. And it's not impossible we get not only UConn, NC State in the men's final. It's possible. I don't think it's going to happen, but it's possible we get UConn, NC State in the men's and the women's, because the UConn women are in. NC State plays South Carolina, UConn versus Iowa, which is a fun game. And I will say, I watched all of LSU Iowa. First time I probably watched a women's game wire to wire in, man, maybe forever. Maybe there's another time or two, but it's not a lot. I will say this, it was a fun game to watch. Clark is unbelievable. I mean, it's nothing, it's not news. If that sport wants to get to the level it wants to get to, we have to get to a point where we can criticize the star players when they don't play well, can be criticized. Because watching the post-game coverage, you know, ESPN had, they showed Angel Reese. She was at the press conference, and under her, you know how they have a little stat line, the little blurbs underneath, it said Angel Reese, 10 straight double-double in the tournament. Now, wait a second. She went 7 of 21 from the floor, and she went 3 of 8 from the line. She stunk in the game. I don't want to hear about double-doubles. And again, if you want to be on equal footing in terms of the sport, like the men, when RJ Davis and Caleb Love shot 0 of 9 from 3 last week, they got destroyed. When Brock Purdy throws interceptions on Christmas, or Lamar Jackson has a bad AFC title game, they get destroyed. If Purdue had lost to Utah State, they get buried. If you want your sport to get to the level you want it to get to, the star players have to be criticized. This isn't a knock on the players. This is a knock on the media and how they treat them with kid gloves. Angel Reese, 10 straight double-doubles. Give me a break. She was 7 of 21 and 3 of 8 from the line. You can't have it both ways where, hey, this is the great sport, it's as good as the men's tournament. If that's the case, you got to be able to criticize the players a little bit, because Reese was not good in the game. Missing free throws left and right, missing shots. She's got a weird-looking shot. She is good on the boards, but a weird-looking shot. So, again, if you want it, you can't have it both ways. If you want to get on that kind of level, you got to be willing to take it where, you know, you criticize the players when they don't play well, just like you would do in any of the other sports. So, fun Final Four, though. UConn versus Iowa is as good as it gets. You see what Oriyama can devise against Clark, who was wide open some of those shots against LSU. So, that'll be fun. I would think Iowa just – look, it's hard to bet against Caitlin Clark. I don't know that I laid the points, but I would think Iowa would win. Some probably an Iowa-South Carolina game where that'll be the title game, and that was a Final Four game last year. So we're looking at another rematch. That will be fun if that's the game. Either way, you're getting a good game because you get UConn back in the title game. I don't know that UConn has the team to win it based on what I've seen, but again, not very much. But just based on the odds, I don't know that you know, they're on the same level as the South Carolina. So good men's game, good women's game. Baseball is back. We'll discuss all of that with Todd Wishnev. That is next. This is the Should A Bet More podcast. All right, we are back. Should A Bet More podcast. Let's talk a little college basketball, a little baseball. You can catch him on the Showtime series Action, Beating the Book Megapod with Gil Alexander and myself during football season and college basketball. It is the great Todd Wishnev. Todd, what's going on, man?
Hey, how are you, Willie?
I'm good. I want to get into a little baseball, a little college basketball. I feel like I had to twist your arm a little bit to come on, but now that you're on, I'm excited to have you.
Well, I mean, you know me, I'm one of the, you know, top guys, like way top guy. I'm not even like Fezzik, like way past Fezzik. So, you know, it's very hard to get a guy like me on, you know, because I'm such an amazing guy and I never lose a bet ever. But anyways, that's just me.
Let's start here. If we were doing this a month ago and I said, hey, give me your breakdown on NC State, just rattle off everything you know about them, what would your scouting report be on NC State?
Blah, just blah, you know, like some talent, but not very disciplined. Just kind of like can't trust them in a big spot, like everything opposite of what they've been basically for the last 8 games or whatever. I was not high on NC State by any metric. I didn't think they were very good at all. You know, I liked that Marcel kid. I thought he was pretty good. And of course the Burns kid is like a unique player, but I did not think this team was, you know, going anywhere. Let's put it that way.
And if I follow up with, I'll say, I come to you from the future and this team won 9 games in a row, 5 in the ACC tournament and 4 to get to a Final Four, your reaction would have been what?
I mean, I'd be shocked. I mean, but the thing is, we have seen weird things like this happen in the NCAA tournament. You know, teams that do have some talent, maybe probably NC State wasn't as bad as they looked all year, and they were probably playing below their possibilities, and now they're playing above their possibilities. So that's a very wide variance of play. Yes. But this happens. I mean, we do see runs by teams where they you know, just everyone comes together, everyone knows their spot, everyone knows what their job is, and everybody does their job. And then all of a sudden, crazy things happen. I mean, I can think of a whole bunch of runs. I mean, obviously, the most famous runs, NC State in '83, the Villanova. The Villanova one's amazing in '86 because Villanova lost to Pitt on the last weekend of the season by 30, lost in the Big East tournament somehow, got in the tournament, and then went on that incredible run to beat Georgetown with the huge upset. But, you know, this has happened before.
Yeah, I'm kicking myself a little bit. Like, we're both looking for sleepers before this tournament starts. And I've never thought about them. And they were pretty good to be in the ACC tournament. I did have them that Saturday night against North Carolina. Sometimes these teams, they steal a bid. It takes up all their, I don't know, energy to win the conference tournament. And I didn't think they were that good. So I don't know, kicking myself a little bit for not seeing this coming. But again, how could you?
How are you going to see this coming? I mean, it's not every year is FAU, you know?
Yeah. And imagine if you did see this coming. Imagine if you woke up, I don't know, 2-3 weeks ago and said, you know what? I have a premonition. I have a feeling NC State's about to get hot, and they're not only going to win the ACC, but they're going to the Final Four. It's like, man, you could take $100, a couple hundred bucks, and you could basically never have to work again. It's insane. It's why we love college basketball. It's why we love betting too, because it's just, you can never quite figure it out. And there are those things out there that just, you could never explain. These 500, 1,000-to-1 things do happen.
I guess that's why we keep coming back. If it was all predictable, I don't think it would be very interesting.
Yeah. How do you break down these two games? Both big spreads. We got Purdue laying about 9.5, UConn laying 11.5, 12, depending upon where you shop. If you had to bet either one of these games, where would you go to give either underdog a shot? Just take it whichever direction you want to go.
I mean, here's the thing that I'm worried. I have a UConn. I don't bet a lot of futures, but last year in December, I bet UConn 22-1 and I won that ticket. And then this year I said, you know what? They look amazing again. I'm doing it again. This time I only got 11-1. So I have a UConn 11-1 ticket. I'm a little concerned about it with this Alabama game because Alabama, if they're hot, now granted, they're not good on defense, although they played great on defense last game, but if they're hot, it's very difficult to beat them if they're going to make all their threes, you know, and UConn is a fantastic team and a fantastic defensive team, but also like, where's Klingon going to play because who's he going to guard on defense? You know, this could be concerning, this whole UConn situation against Alabama. So I am a little concerned about that. I don't think I'm going to bet it pregame, but obviously I'm going to be watching it in game. And if I see that UConn's having a hard time matching up with all the 3-point shooters, you know, and you're getting a gazillion points, you know, maybe.
So you're thinking maybe take Bama plus the points to hedge. I mean, you got it plus 550, 6-1 on a money line, which you could start to lock in a nice little profit. You do.
Yeah, I'm probably going to do some of that just because I'm a little concerned about Alabama. I think I'm less concerned against Purdue than I am even against Alabama, because I think Klingon versus Edie is kind of a standstill. And then I like the rest of the UConn guys better than I like the rest of the Purdue guys. But Bama's kind of a different animal. They're scary.
Interesting. How do you break down NC State, Purdue? Purdue laying 9.5.
I mean, look, it's supposed to be Purdue, right? But are we going to doubt? I guess maybe this will be the time everyone's like, wow, NC State, they're just so good. So good.
I agree.
Is Burns going to be able to do what he's doing against these other guys when he's going against a Jigundis Edie? I don't know how he's going to get a shot off. I mean, do you see how Burns can be good against the size of Edie? I don't really see that. So I guess if I had to play that one, I'd probably play at Purdue. I mean, I don't know if you agree with me about Burns is going to struggle against Edie.
I agree. He will have a difficult time getting a shot off. And my concern with NC State, and I lean towards Purdue in the game, is that Burns has a couple quick fouls. And Burns is obviously such a big part of what they do, and not just his scoring, but he's such an instinctive passer. And I guess some of the lineup changes, they put more shooters on the court. And when you have Burns and four shooters, that's kind of their whole game, because he can just kick it out. He can feel the double coming. He can just get you a good shot either way. It's a little, obviously not on the level of Nikola Jokic, but it's that sort of level where he's either going to score or get you a good shot. And if he's got two quick fouls, then you run into the dilemma of, all right, now he's got to be careful. Now you got to risk getting a third foul. Now, do we put him on the bench? And that's where the game could get away from you. And Purdue can make their threes too. So they didn't shoot well from three last game. I think like 3 of 18, and they still won. So I would worry this one would get away from you if you're NC State.
Yeah, you know, I kind of agree with you on that as well, because I didn't even think about on the other side of the court, how is Burns not going to foul Edie a million times? And like you just said, you know, that's what Purdue does. I mean, I won so many team total overs in the first half on Purdue this year by just watching, are they going to call the fouls on Edie down in the post? If they are, they're going to, other team's going to have four fouls by the, you know, 14 minute mark, and Purdue's going to be shooting one and ones by the 9 minute mark almost every single game in the first half. It was like ridiculous, you know, if they're giving Edie the calls, right? Because he's unguardable once he gets that ball down low. And so it's just a question, are they going to call the guy putting his elbow in his back or not? And if they do, Purdue shoots free throws forever. And that's why, you know, now of course I lost the over 70 and a half in that last one. When Smith missed, an 80% shooter Smith missed two free throws. And then Ziegler, I think, also shoots like 85%, missed a one and one. And then Edie made one of two. Of course, I lose by a half. It was just a brutal loss. But, you know, they've been good to me in the first half in game overs. When the fouls start raking up, it's very consistent for a lot of Purdue points because they'll just keep throwing it into him. And then if he starts getting doubled, then like you said, they've got outside shooters who are – They're wide open, you know?
Yep, absolutely. Any feel for either total? Bama, Connecticut has come down to 160 and a half. I think it was 161 and a half, something like that. So a little movement there. NC State and Purdue, 146. We'll start with Bama, Connecticut, just because I do think the pace is interesting there. Will UConn be happy to run and gun with them? Will UConn slow it down? What's your thought on the 160 and a half?
Yeah, and that's the thing where that's definitely an in-game for me because I want to see – what Danny Hurley is going to strategize here on how he wants to play Bama. So I'll be very interested to watch the first 8 minutes of this game to try to figure out, okay, are we going to play this game, you know, at the breakneck Alabama speed? Are they going to try to slow it down, make it a half court game, and then, you know, go from there? Because there's, if you don't know that ahead of time, you can really get screwed. You know, my sense is, they're probably going to want to slow it down a bit. I don't know. Would you agree with that?
I would think so. I don't know. Would UConn be happy to run and go with them? I'm with you. I need to see it first to have any sort of inclination or conviction in terms of which way I'm betting. Like, I don't want to bet it till I see it first. And sometimes you see it in the first few minutes where, all right, they're happy to run and gun, and, or, hey, this is a little slower. I mean, remember Bama played the Grand Canyon game. Was it the round of 32? Or, I mean, it was a lot of missed shots, but that game got really ugly, really clunky, and that total never got close. So I'd rather see it first.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. The other game, if I had to bet it right away, I believe it's like 146-ish.
Yeah, 146.
That one to me feels like an under. If I had to bet it pregame, I'd probably bet it under. But again, you know, I want to see what's going to happen with the fouls. Are they going to call the fouls on Edie? If they call the fouls on Edie, they just get so many free throws, Purdue, you know, that it gets ridiculous. It's hard to get the game to go under. But, you know, with that said, that's another game I'd like to watch and see. That's why I like to do them in game. But if I had to bet it, I'd probably bet it under.
And you think we're looking at UConn over Purdue in the title game?
I mean, I hope so. I have that UConn ticket. But, I mean, UConn, I'm really concerned about this Alabama game. If they can get through Alabama, I'm not as concerned about Purdue just because I think there's a definite mismatch. I mean, the Purdue kids are good, don't get me wrong, but I think the Connecticut, if you take Klingon and Edie out and you say that's pretty much a wash, right? Klingon can definitely stay right with Edie. He's not going to just dominate him, right? And neither, obviously I'd rather have Edie than Klingon, but not by that much, right?
Yeah, no, I would definitely agree with that. And I guess Klingon's working his way up where he's like going to be the second or third pick of the draft. Were you going to keep
yeah,
going?
Yeah, so now you take Klingon and Edie out, and now it's four against four. I want Connecticut's four versus Purdue's four.
Yep, I totally agree with you. And we would be looking at like a UConn minus five over Purdue in the title game. Would that seem about right to you?
Yeah, sounds about right. Would it sound right to you?
Yes, it does.
Yeah. Sounds about right.
Yeah.
But I'm concerned about this. Now, look, of course you can come out and blow out everybody if Hurley has a great strategy on what he's going to do with these Bama. The fact that Bama and UConn are playing with this much rest as opposed to 2 days rest, like let's say this was the championship game, I would be even more concerned. But the fact that they have all this time to prepare for Bama makes me feel better about UConn. Whereas if this was like the championship game and they didn't have as much time, I would be even more concerned with Bama. But I think Hurley's going to cook something up to try to figure out what to do. And I like the fact that he has all this time to deal with Bama, because I think Bama's a more difficult animal. Whereas Purdue, we know what Purdue's going to do. They're going to throw the ball to Edie. They're going to try to hit the guys. You know what I mean?
No, absolutely. And there, I mean, I guess if you're Hurley, just, hey, nothing clean from three, just run them off the 3-point line. And again, they like to get to the rim too, but just try to make them settle for mid-range jumpers. Try to make them shoot twos instead of threes. I guess that would be the game plan. Just try to run them off the line.
By the way, all five guys, I might be wrong, but do all five guys on Alabama shoot threes? I know at least four of them do.
I don't know. I don't watch them enough. I know against Clemson, one of the reasons I liked the under, and that was a painful loss on the under late, was Clemson's got some size. They got two bigs, and I thought they'd take some of their shooting off the court and go with two bigs. So I do think it's lineup dependent, but a lot of those guys can't shoot the three, obviously.
Yeah, so that becomes problematic for Klingon if he's going to have to guard a guy out on the perimeter. You know, that could probably be, a problem, but you know, I guess we'll have to watch and see, you know, to see how it's going to play out before I would get involved, obviously.
Go quickly to baseball in a second. We've talked about this every few weeks, the fouling, where in the regular season, hey, they're not fouling as much. The totals are too high late. I don't know. What have you thought, conference tournament, NCAA tournament? I get the sense it's sort of been a mixed bag. Sometimes it's a foul fest. Sometimes it's not. How would you characterize the fouling?
I think it was more. Look, it's always spotty depending on the coach and depending on the situation. But I think there has been more fouling in the conference tournaments and the tournaments, but not by that much. Certainly not as much as it used to be. Let's put it that way. Now, granted, the Duke game that started fouling with 2 minutes, that was probably the most fouling I saw all year. But then we saw that other game that we lost the over on, when they with like 50 seconds left, they missed and they didn't foul NC State until like 29 seconds or something, or 19 seconds. I can't remember exactly. And then the Stanford kid, the kid who came from Stanford, I keep forgetting his name, but the little white guy from NC State who used to be on Stanford, he missed the two free throws and we lost that over. Remember that one?
And then they didn't foul.
So it's like it's so weird. Like some of these teams, they notify. How about that other the other game with 15 seconds left? Somebody scored. I can't remember exactly who it was. It was a big favorite who lost. They scored with 15. Oh yeah, it was Arizona. They scored 15 seconds left. They don't even foul until like 8 seconds. I mean, give me a break. It's not like it used to be. Definitely now, it's definitely more than the regular season though.
Yeah, which I guess to summarize, you'd say it's hard because sometimes they do and sometimes they don't. And trying to bet on, hey, sometimes they do, sometimes they don't, it's not that easy.
Yeah, no doubt. But still, in general, I think the under is like the way to go. I'm still kicking myself on that under 138.5. And that was a game that we should have both lost, because once the game gets to six, you're in trouble. Oh, you're with dead. 2 minutes to go. But somehow you survived and I didn't, because I had a point worse at 137.5. But it just shows how much, because it used to be down five with a minute to go, you're fouling immediately. And now they play it out. They try to get the ball back with 30 seconds left, down five, and go from there, you know, or down four, same idea. In the old days, that used to be a foul, you know? So it is interesting.
Yeah, and for those of us who don't know what we're referencing, hey, we're trying to bet these totals with sometimes 3, 4, 5 minutes left in the game and trying to determine, hey, is this going to be a foul fest? And you bet over, or they made the line too high. It's a close game. It's a 1-point game. You play the under where the game will slow down, the pace will slow down. So it's definitely less predictive than it's been in past years, I would say.
Yeah, no, I would agree with you.
Last couple ones, baseball. Any takeaways here the first 5 days? Your Buccos are 5-0. The Yankees are 5-0. Wow. What's real? What's not? What's your betting been like the first couple of days here in baseball?
I've been doing okay. The first couple of days was amazing, and then the last couple of days not as good. Last night I took the Cardinals. The Cardinals were up 4-2 going to top of six, and I kind of wanted to take their team total over because the Padres' middle relief hasn't been good. Immediately, they hit a two-run homer, and then they get another guy on base. So they have six runs, a guy on base, and the over was only 7.5. So I had 1.5 more runs, and I have four at-bats. There were still no outs because I still have top of the six, top seven, top eight, top nine, right? And so I quickly bet over 7.5, thinking I get two more. Immediately, I have second and third no outs in the sixth, and Nolan Arenado hits a line drive right at the third baseman. Otherwise, I win that bet right there. Then they had another chance in the seventh. But, I mean, that's how baseball goes. You're going to have games where you just should have won, and you're not going to win. But overall, it's been pretty good jumping on these pitchers. With the team totals, I've been trying to figure out, which pitchers just don't have it. Like that AJ Puck game against the Pirates, I took the Pirate team total first five. When I saw he couldn't find the plate, I think he walked five or six guys. You know, if you're watching these games and you see a pitcher that just doesn't have it, there's opportunities there in game.
Anyone you think is better or worse than you expected? Hey, I'm looking to bet on this team, looking to bet against this team. I know the Rockies stink, the A's stink, but any sort of generalization?
I mean, the Reds look like they have that same come-from-behind spirit that they had last year. I don't know if you remember last year, but yeah. The Reds seem to come from behind game after game. Like, so many games, they're down 4-2 in the sixth, and they come back 5-1, in the fourth, they come back. You know, they're just always never say die, the Reds last year, and it seems to be holding over again this year. They've had a couple. I had the Washington Nationals 5-3, two outs, bottom of the ninth, nobody on. Washington Nationals plus 145, and somehow I lose because the Reds hit a double homer, and I lose with two outs. How many times do you think that's going to happen in a whole year? Two outs, nobody on, and I'm winning 5-3 by two runs, and I lose the game. How many times will that happen
in a whole year? Less than five, maybe one or two more. That's a bad one. I didn't realize. I know Benson hit a three-run walk-off homer off Finnegan. I didn't realize it was a two-run lead with two out, nobody on. Wow, that's a bad one.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. But that's, again, just showing how the Reds, they just do not die. They just continue. And even last night, they were down 2-0. It could have been down worse against the Phillies. They hung around, won the game late. This Reds team has that spunk, I feel like.
Yeah. Anything else? Mets stink. Marlins are not good. Any teams? Do you bet a lot of pre-flop baseball?
A little bit. I've been dabbling in the props lately, yeah, with some of the walks allowed. And last night I had Ronel Blanco over 1.5 walks because last year in all seven of his starts, he went over two walks or more. I figured for sure he's going to get two walks tonight, right? He walks Springer, the first batter. He then gets 26 consecutive outs. 26. Springer's up again. He walks him, and I win the bet, and he gets the no-hitter. So I actually won the bet on Blanco over 1.5 walks, even though he had a no-hitter. So that was kind of a nice thing. But, of course, that's not going to happen that often. But it was just kind of weird. But I have been dabbling in some of these, pitcher props, and sometimes even in the hitter props. Like, I'll look at guys that I feel like are really, if you're watching the games and you're looking at the box scores, you're seeing who's on the ball, who's not on the ball. Key Brian Hayes for the Pirates has been just on it early this season. And they've been going against lefties that aren't even that good. So I've been playing Key Brian Hayes at minus 200 to get a hit, minus 220 to get a hit. I had Mookie Betts a couple times like that. If I can find a pitcher who I don't think's that good and he's not like a strikeout guy, he's a guy who they're going to put the ball in play against, and I can find a guy who, hits other-handed, so to speak, a right-hander against a lefty or something who's really kind of hot at the time, that's been, somewhat successful.
Yeah, it's there's so much to handicap with baseball. Now, like you mentioned, you could bet over, under, earn runs, bases, strikeouts, hits, walks allowed. I mean, there's just, it's overwhelming at times. To me, it's like it's a little bit overload where I don't even know where to start. Like side total, first five, yeah, it's just so many markets.
There is a lot of stuff, but I've been having a good time really delving into it early season, because I've been watching the games really carefully.
Yeah, and when you have that much stuff to put numbers on, it's just hard to make good numbers on all of it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And you see, look, I mean, certain things yesterday. I played the Braves over 2.5 first five team total a lot last year. And they played, who did they play the other day? They're playing White Sox. And
played
who started? No. It was at,
the Monday White game Sox they yesterday. Played Flexen. Yeah, in the White
yeah,
Sox.
Yeah, Flexen. Right. So Flexen was starting for the White Sox, and I was like, wait a second. You're telling me the Braves are only I think they were -130 or to get more than 2.5 in the first five innings against Flexen. Flexen's going to give up hits. That guy is not a strikeout pitcher, you know? And of course, you know, they pretty easily did it. Now, you know, they don't all easily go like that, but the Braves are just, it's so hard to keep them down for long. So if you have a situation where the Braves, you know, don't score more than two runs in the first five innings, you know, three or four games in a row, and now they're going against a crappy pitcher, look out, because sooner or later those bats are going to explode. That team is just crazy hitting.
Yeah, they are really good. And you think this Yankee team is much improved? I know you bet them on the Monday night game against the Diamondbacks team total over. What have you seen from the Yankees?
Yeah, well, I like that one because that Ryan Nelson to me is not very good. I looked at his advanced stats. He didn't, and the Yankees, well, you know, they're not the like crazy lineup that they've been like before last year, but they are getting pretty good. When Volpe's hitting, which he's starting to hit now, it really lengthens the lineup a lot, you know, because you got a bunch of guys in there, you know, who are pretty solid. You know, of course you're expecting the Judges, the Gleyber Torres, the Rizzos, you're expecting those guys to hit. But when you get those guys later in the lineup also hitting, it becomes very, very tough to stop them. That's why the Braves are so good. They got Michael Harris in the back of the lineup, Orlando Arcia in the back of the lineup. These guys are good hitters.
Yep, and the pitcher never gets a breather too. When you can go 7, 8, 9 and you can just get through that inning easily with low stress pitches, you can have a nice 10-12 pitch inning, 1, 2, 3, then you're better equipped to face the heart of the lineup, where if those guys are wearing you out, then you have less bullets, fewer bullets for the big boys. So then it's a compounding effect, I would say.
Yeah, no, I would agree with you. And I think the Yankees do look, and you know what? The Yankees pitching has looked pretty good so far, especially the relief. They've won a bunch of these games late, you know, just hanging in there with good relief. I know you said you didn't really like their closing
I don't trust
situation, but
Holmes. Yeah, Holmes could have easily
yeah.
blown two of the Houston games. I don't know if you saw the end of that game. It took miracle after
Oh,
miracle.
really? I didn't see
Oh,
that part.
my
Yeah.
God. Yeah, they had
Yeah.
two on, nobody out. And then somebody, I forget who it was, almost hit a game-winning double. It was like an inch foul. And then Birdie made a play in the down the line that saved a game-winning double. Alvarez almost hit one out, and then Verdugo had to make a sliding catch. So he really danced between the range ups. And he did the same thing on Thursday where Soto threw the guy out at home at the plate to that would have tied the game.
Wow. Yeah, but I don't know. I so far I've liked the Yankees. I've been plus on the Yankees, you know. The Tigers are an interesting team. They're good on pitching and the hitting is kind of weak, so you might want to be looking at Tigers unders.
Yeah, that makes sense. They've been like that for a few years, where they got some arms, but
Yeah.
they don't have a lot of explosiveness with the bats.
Yeah. And of course, you know, the Dodgers, to me the Dodgers, I feel like Will Smith is such a key linchpin of that lineup, because when they play him and they don't play Barnes down at the back of the lineup, now you got Mookie, Ohtani, Freddie Freeman, and Will Smith, and then Muncy, and then Teoscar. It's like it's crazy. But when you don't have Will Smith in the lineup, it just feels like the lineup's not as lengthy, you know.
Last one before you go, and I kept you a little longer. I apologize. Ohtani, what do you think happened? How do you think this plays out? Does he get suspended? If I made you odds maker right now, what would you put as a line for yes suspension, no suspension? And what do you ultimately think happened?
I would say he's probably not going to be suspended -120. It's close, but I would say probably he's not going to get suspended. Probably something fishy was going on there. He was probably involved in gambling, because how do you get $4.5 million in debt? That doesn't just make any sense. I kind of feel like he's been struggling early in the season because of maybe the stress of dealing with this. I don't know if you've noticed that, but he hasn't really been himself. You know, he hasn't been killing it early on, so it could be, you know, a little bit of that.
Yeah, and look, you went to a situation now where people are actually watching your games. The Angels, they're going to win 70 games every year. They're out of the race by Memorial Day. Now you're in a position where throwing the gambling stuff, but you're actually on a team that people care about. So maybe that has an effect too.
Yeah, we'll see. It'll be very interesting to watch Ohtani.
Todd, appreciate you coming on, man. Let everyone know where they can find you.
At T Wishnev on Twitter, at TWISHNEV. Haven't been putting as much stuff on there, and I haven't gotten to getting more people on the WhatsApp. I have like a WhatsApp in-game thing where I put people on so that they can know what I'm doing live. And I just, it takes time to put every, you know, enter everybody in. And I just haven't had the time to do that, but hopefully soon I'll put more people on. So if you want to be on that, you can just drop me a quick DM.
All right, Todd, thanks for coming on.
Thanks.
All right, that will do it. Thank you guys for listening. Thank you to Todd Wishnev. We will be back Friday, full breakdown as we continue to get ready for the Final Four. More baseball pretty soon, NBA playoffs, NFL draft. So start to turn the page a little bit. Thank you guys for listening. See you Friday.